Hello, Zachary Sexton here. The Productivity Show is the place that brings together the best minds, principles, and tools in the industry to show you how to take more action on your goals so you can do more of what you really want in work and life. The crew at Asian Efficiency and I want to help you live more effective and successful lives in the information age. Make sure to stay in contact and get more productive updates by signing up for our newsletter at asianefficiency.com. Today is episode number 37, and we'll be talking with journalist and author Laura Vanderkam about how to get a greater handle on your weeks and mornings. I feel like this is a great compliment to last week's episode on slowing down. If you listen to the episode, you can compare Brooke McAllery's and Laura's strategies when it comes to living a more intentional life. By listening to our discussion, you'll discover how to get a jump on your day by doing those important but not urgent things first thing, how to prevent lost time with time-expanding activities like email, and how many hours do high-earning moms actually sleep a night. Please enjoy Productivity Show, episode number 37, Productive Weeks with Laura Vanderkam. Today I have with me Laura Vanderkam. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
I want to give a little introduction. You were actually one of the first productivity books that I read when it was a couple years ago. And Laura is an expert in time management, and we'll be talking about how you can plan your mornings and your weeks so you can spend more time on the things that really matter. And we'll be diving into what are those things that really matter in our discussion as well. So Laura is an author of several books in time management and productivity, including 168 Hours and What Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast, which is a short, little, but very good book on how to intentionally set what you find, and I also find, one of the more important parts of the day, your morning. So Laura, that's my little spiel on you. If you want to take a minute to tell us about you personally, who you are, how many babies you have, and what you help people do.
Yes, exactly. Well, I'm a journalist and author, and I live outside Philadelphia with my husband and, as you were noting, my four children. The littlest one just joined us in January, so we've been adjusting to being a bigger family these past few months, but it's been fun. And my next book, which is called I Know How She Does It, How Successful Women Make the Most of Their Time, will be out in June.
Oh, wow. Congratulations. Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks for sharing. And we can definitely talk a little bit more about how the successful women do it. And I think you, just the fact that you manage such a large family as well as have such a good professional career, you've got a number of books under your belt, really that alone proves that you have this time management thing a little bit under control. So I'm gonna call that your expertise.
I try. Some days better than others.
Yeah. Well, to start, I just want to ask you, for your opinion, why do you find that mornings are such an important part of the day? One of your books is What Most Successful People Do Before Breakfast. So maybe we can dive a little into that.
Well, how we start our days really sets the tone for everything else that comes afterwards. I find that mornings are great for accomplishing anything that is important to you that life has a way of crowding out. So it's a great time for doing those important but not urgent things that we all know we should do, but that come 5 p.m. just do not happen because we're tired, we're burnt out. It's not going to be happening before we go to bed at night. So mornings are a great time for doing anything that you would like to do and don't seem to be able to fit into the rest of your life.
Great. I'm sure things are changing a little bit now that you've got a new baby on board, but what do your mornings look like? How do you structure them?
Yes, it's true that mornings are a little bit different with a newborn than they are when I don't have a newborn. When I was writing about mornings that was after three kids, but before four. And I was starting to get a little bit more control of my time and my schedule. So when things were going well, what I'd often do is wake up at six, which is before my kids tend to get up, get my coffee. Some mornings I'd shower in the mornings, others I'd do it the night before. Come downstairs and try and get in at least an hour of work before it was, other people would start waking up. And I would try to do things that were important to me that would take a lot of willpower, a lot of focus and discipline in that first hour. And then I would, when the kids start getting up, have breakfast with them and have a little bit of family time before everyone goes about their daily routines. Of course, now with an infant, the start of my morning is often determined by when he wakes up screaming, needing to eat. So that's just part of the deal. But I will get back to having that morning routine fairly soon. And as it is, he eats around 5 and then eats again around 8 or 9. So if I wake up around 6:30, I can still get in some work in the morning before the rest of the household wakes up. So I'm finding ways to still make that happen.
All right. We just had somebody on who wakes up at 4 to get around that obstacle. I don't know if most people would be game for making that happen, but if you know the most important things can get done in that time, do you find you really have a lot of the energy or a little bit more clarity, or is that just the only quiet time that you have during the day?
It's not the only quiet time I have, in that, you know, I keep pretty standard office hours, 9 to 5 or so, break for lunch in the middle of the day, but I do have quiet to get my work done. It's just that I also find out that I get a jump on the day by doing that work in the beginning. It's quiet. It's you can really bring that energy you have in the mornings to bear on whatever problems are important to you. And you know, there's less interruption in the sense of people aren't emailing you, people aren't calling you. That's time you can have to yourself. And you're mentioning about somebody waking up at 4 in order to get up before their kids. I get it. I totally get it. And for some parents, that is the only time they can have to themselves. I would also say, though, that there may be some seasons of life where it just doesn't work. You know, you don't want to be sleep deprived any more than you need to be as a parent of young children. I mean, you're going to be sleep deprived anyway when you've got very little ones. So adding to that is probably not going to be helpful for you or the family. It might be worth trying to carve out some other time that you can have to yourself, if that means trading off with your spouse, hiring a babysitter or something like that, in order to get that time for yourself at another point during the day.
That seems like a good tactic. And she was smart about it. She had a really good evening ritual where she went to bed right after her kids about 8:30. So she was still getting the rest and recovery she needed. It wasn't sacrificing that part of her health just to make up for another part of her life that would, you know, if you're not taking care of your own self, that that would lead probably to most things to fall apart. And I think maybe this segues in well before we talk about how you structure your weeks. Maybe what are those important things that you like to get done every week? What are those areas of focus that you find have the highest leverage and the rest maybe can be put to the side, might be just a little bit of noise that you don't need to necessarily pay attention to?
Well, my highest priorities are my book projects. I said I have this book coming out in June. So when I was writing and researching it, that was my highest priority. I wrote a novel recently that I also decided to make my highest priority some days. And so I enjoyed having that time to work on it. And even now, the things related to publicity for it, really thinking about what that strategy should be and who I should be reaching out to instead of just seeing who comes to me. That's the kind of thing that really requires a lot of thinking and focus. So those are the kinds of things to do first. If I'm not actively working on a book project, then often a major article or a tough edit of an existing article that I have a draft of is something that I could do first thing, because again, it requires more energy than something that I know will be easier to write, or doing a light edit of something. I tend to try to schedule phone calls for the afternoon, because that's the time when I'm less able to focus and think. Not that I don't want to be able to think on the phone with people, but it doesn't require quite that same intensity, that it's more of a back and forth. And so you get a little bit of a break. So that's how I try to schedule my days.
Okay. So that's how you schedule your days. However, you say in your book, 168 hours, it's probably more efficient or effective to plan your week than any given day. Why is that?
Because a week gives us a more accurate picture of our entire lives. And in any given day, you're probably not going to be able to fit in every professional and personal priority that matters to you. But in the course of a week, you probably can. So, I mean, if you think about it, you're trying to schedule in, say, 4 workouts. Well, you're probably not going to exercise every single day. But if you look at the 7 days of a week, it becomes a lot easier. You'd say, well, I'll do Saturday and Sunday, and then let me just find two spots during the work week when that can happen. Finding two spots during the work week is a lot easier than being like, oh, well, I have to exercise for an hour at lunch every work day. Well, that's not going to happen. And so then you start thinking, oh, I can't exercise. But if you just look for two spots during the work week that you can make fit, then you've got a regular exercise habit going. And likewise, many of the things that people feel they just don't have time to do professionally, many of those important but not urgent things that we talked about, don't have to be done every day. I mean, if you carved out, say, 2 hours on Tuesday mornings for really thinking long term about your career, having a bit of strategy going on during that time, you could get a lot done in that 2 hours. Now, it doesn't mean you have to carve out 2 hours every morning, because you're not going to carve out 2 hours every morning to do that. But 2 hours on a Tuesday, well, that you can probably do. So thinking about the whole week means you start to see how much space there is. 168 hours is just a lot of time. You know, if you work full time, so that's 40 hours a week, and sleep 8 hours a night, and 50, so that's 56 hours a week. That still leaves 72 hours for other things. It really is a lot of time.
You're also very data-driven, which is a big reason why we have you on. One of our core values at Asian Efficiency is data-driven decisions. And so this is just with our company, but we also suggest it with people. With your book, 168 Hours, you interviewed over 100 successful people and asked them to log their time. What did you find?
Well, I certainly found that a key part of being successful is making time for what is important to you first, and then letting other things fill around that time. There are certain activities we do that can really expand to fill all available space. On the home front, housework is something that can expand to fill all available space. I mean, you can constantly be cleaning your house. You can constantly be doing yard work. You can constantly be running errands. Or you can decide that, hey, you know, I can play with my kids first, and then if I get around to making my kitchen spotless after that, that's fine. But if I don't, at least I've played with my kids first. And it's the same thing at work. An email will expand to fill all available space. So people who are really effective at work make time for the bigger picture stuff, for their highest impact activities, and say, okay, well, if I get to my email, I'll get to my email, but I'm not going to spend 2 hours on email first and then have no time left over because I get distracted by other things. I'm going to start with what's important to me in my organization. So that was really what I found. But I would say that 168 hours was not even as much data-driven as some of the other projects I've done since. This latest book project I've been working on, I really did. I had 1,001 days of time logs from high-earning women who also have kids. So I could really tell what is the average work week, how many hours do people sleep per day and per week, how much time do people spend on chores and errands, and when do they work, and how those work shifts are structured in order to maximize family time, for instance. So that was even more data driven than all the other work I've done before.
Wow, that's fascinating. Broad strokes, if it's not revealing too much, what were some of the things that you found with all those logs of those successful women?
The interesting thing I found is what is not really surprising to me, because I have studied other big time use surveys. The Bureau of Labor Statistics does one every year called the American Time Use Survey, where they have people keep diaries for a day and talk through a day with a researcher on the phone. And by keeping a diary, you have a more accurate impression of your life, because we all have certain ideas of how much we work and how much we sleep, but they're colored by question of what is typical and what is atypical, or what we think is normal, and also what the researcher is asking about it. So it's actually well known that if somebody's doing a sleep survey, people are primed to think about sleep because that's what the researcher is asking them about. So they'll think about, you know, how much sleep should a person like me be getting? You know, well, I think I'm important and busy, so therefore I'm going to tell you that I sleep 6 hours a night. But that's probably not true. You probably sleep a lot more that. And that's what I found with this survey. Women, even these high earning women, did not work around the clock. They had relatively reasonable work weeks, longer than the average person, but not by too much. They also slept relatively close to 8 hours a day, which I also found very heartening, because we normally think that working parents are burning the midnight oil. But in fact, the average woman in my survey was sleeping quite close to 56 hours per week.
Wow, that's great. What was your criteria for high earning, if I might ask?
So every woman in my study was earning six figures and also had kids under age 18 at home.
All right. All right. Well, that's interesting. Thank you for sharing that with me. And when that comes out, we'll have to maybe have you back on so you can share more of the activities and the data that you found. I guess next, I want to go into a little bit of a different area. It's more about the difficulty of saying no. So when people say, I don't have time, and I've said this before, and I know you've said this before, it's really, it's not true that they don't have time. They probably do have time. It's just not a priority for them. So when you're talking about planning your mornings and planning your days and planning your weeks, you are basically setting your priorities. How do you then, when you've set your priorities more intentionally, and now you've planned out a week that looks like, all right, this is more in line with my long-term goals and values, spending more time on my career, with my family, also with myself, you know, exercise and sleep, making sure I have the mental capabilities that I need to be present in all my other areas of life. So you've reprioritized and you found there's a lot of things in the past that you said yes to that you probably should not have. How do you then go back and say no to some of those things? That might be a problem some listeners might have.
So what's important to do is to keep your mind on these goals that you have for yourself. So it might help to put a list even of the things that are important to you somewhere where you're going to see it, whether it's a post-it note on your desk, if it's something, I mean, I've heard of people putting a note on their phones even, you know, just so when somebody calls to ask you to do something, you can see, oh, I'm already quite committed to other things, and to remind you that there, you know, your time is limited. So saying yes to one thing is saying no to something else. And the question, well, what are you saying no to? And if you're saying no to things that aren't that meaningful to you, I mean, you know, getting together with a friend who you dearly love and want to spend time with, and you are planning on watching TV, well, you know, maybe you should go with a friend. Like you are giving up something that you could do at another point, or maybe isn't that important to you. So that's a good reason to say yes. But if it's something that you're doing merely out of obligation or because somebody else considers it an important idea and you hate saying no, then, you know, buck up a little bit. It's about courage. Life is, you're not going to get that time back. There are nice ways to say no, but ultimately, time is a non-renewable resource. So you want to make sure you're spending it on things that are meaningful and enjoyable to you and the people you care about.
That's a great answer. And actually, you already answered my next question, which was, is there a case for making time for wasted time? And I think despite the amount of things that you tend to get done during the week and the amount of obligations that you have, you say, yeah, that making time for wasted time isn't the worst thing in the world.
Of course not. I mean, I waste plenty of time. I will tell you that right now. I am on social media a lot, and I can fool myself that it's because of work that I'm trying to promote my books and all that. But the honest truth is I just like seeing what's there. I can spend all kinds of time clicking between various websites that I enjoy reading, and it's purely just because I'm interested in it. I can tell myself I'm getting article ideas, but I'm not. Like, let's be honest, I'm not. I just want to be there. And I think that that's fine. And I do less of that when I'm busier. And when I'm more busy than I do, you know, I try to stay off when I'm extremely busy. But, you know, there are times of life when I'm not, and I'm recovering from that. And so I can spend some time on those sites. I think the important thing is to make sure that you are spending time on the things that do matter to you. If, for instance, I was feeling like I wasn't getting my work done or I wasn't making time to exercise and I was spending time on these other things that weren't important to me, that would require some recalibrating of my schedule. But when you are making time for the things that matter to you, sometimes you see that there is quite a bit of open space still. I mean, you know, it's the rare person who focuses intensely for too many hours on work without needing some sort of break, and breaks are good, and do something you like with them. And it's not really wasting time when you're refreshing yourself.
Well, that's a thoughtful answer. One question before we dive into the last part of the show, which is, what's a book that's helped you be more productive? What's a tool or resource that you might recommend to our listeners? And what's a frog or a big project that you're working on? And it sounds like your book might be your frog. I wanted to ask you, you dug into the data. You asked people, you asked highly productive people to do time logs for themselves. Is this something that you would suggest for individuals that were wondering, all right, well, I know I'm feeling a little overwhelmed. It seems like I don't have any time for my weeks to week. Is that a good first step to do, to log their time?
It is a wonderful first step to do. I don't think it's possible to spend your time better without thinking about how you're spending it now. And the honest truth is, most of us don't know how we're spending it now. We may have ideas, but they may or may not be accurate. Many of us, for instance, aren't quite sure how many hours we work. We may know roughly when our Monday through Friday work schedule is, but you know, we check email outside of work and we maybe do a little bit of work on the weekends. And next thing you know, we've come up with a highly inflated number of how many hours we're devoting to it. We may think we sleep a certain amount, but that happened one night and there's six other nights in a week. So let's see what those other nights are like. We may lose vast amounts of time. I think weekend mornings are a great time to sleep in, but many people don't sleep in because they have kids and then yet still don't really know what they did with that time. There's a lot of puttering around the house before the first activity of the day. So think about it. What's going on during that time? And is that what you want to be doing? Or could you be doing something that you'd enjoy more with that time you might have? So I really think that keeping track of your time for a week is a great first step to using your time better. You don't have to do this for the rest of your life. But even just 1 week will give you a lot of insight.
Do you ever stress test yours, maybe once a year, log your times, go back and look at them?
I definitely log my time once a year, at least. I try to do it a little bit more frequently. I don't do it all the time, but you know, life changes a lot with kids as their schedules change. And so I want to make sure that I am still tuned up to getting done what I would like to be getting done. And so every few months, I keep track of my time. And I can tell you, even though I've done this dozens of times, over the years since I started being interested in this topic, I still learn something new every time. I always see something that I could do better.
Maybe you can give us an example.
Sure.
So I'm curious. I'm like, I wonder what I would find if I did this.
Well, I mean, weekends are often this vast black hole of time. And especially when you're dealing with other people in your life. I mean, if you're on your own, then you can sort of decide what you want to do on the weekend and that will happen. But when you're negotiating with other family members, it's often easier to just sort of hang out and yet not be doing anything fun with that hanging out time. We may also get to the weekends and feel like we're tired and we want to do nothing. But, you know, especially if you have little kids, it's impossible to do nothing because you're taking care of them. So thinking about how you want that weekend time to go and planning in just a few meaningful or enjoyable activities can vastly increase the chances that the weekend feels good, feels like you actually rejuvenated yourself and you can hit Monday ready to go. So after logging my time, I'm certainly trying to be better about this, to think at least by Wednesday what I would like to do over the weekend and have some clarity from my other family members about what they would like to do and see what we can make happen for all of us. Another thing I found out is what we were talking about earlier of scheduling phone calls in the afternoon so I can preserve my mornings for intense writing and editing. I would find by looking at my time logs that in the afternoon, I would have a hard time figuring out exactly what I was doing with my time. I would go back and forth from project to project and then wander around the house and do all sorts of other things that were not work, but weren't really a rejuvenating break either. And so once I realized that, I said, oh, well, I can focus in the morning, so I'll schedule my tough stuff in the morning. The afternoon can be more broken up, and that's also a good time for me to exercise because that's when I need a break.
I'm so glad you said both of those things. Actually, the first one specifically, people should really think about this. Wednesday is actually our cutoff day as well. So my girlfriend Nikita and I always plan something fun every weekend usually with people that we're trying to keep in touch with. We've got a number of friends and, you know, can't see them all every week, but we always try to plan something fun every weekend, and it has so many benefits. You have something to look forward to. You don't do what you say and just putter around and get done with the weekend and like, well, that wasn't relaxing. That wasn't that wasn't very memorable. It didn't really do anything all that great. So that one tip alone, I think, is worth the price of admission of listening to you and I chat about time management, because it really does. It makes life a little bit more fun too. So plan fun things on the weekends. You know, you don't have to work all the time, and you don't have to just laze about when you're not working. So that's great, Laura. So I want to respect your time. We've been talking about time management the whole time, so maybe we can start to wrap things up with the productivity show, Book, Tool, and Frog. So is there any book that you've read recently or that's out there top of mind that has helped you become more productive recently, or that you just want to share?
Well, it's one I'm sure all your listeners have read, which is Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. But it was really the first productivity book that I read. And it's why I started thinking of my life in terms of weeks and planning out my weeks and thinking not just about, you know, what do I have to do, but what would I like to do, both in my personal life and my professional life, and making sure that those priorities get planned. So, like I said, I'm sure all your listeners have read it, but if you haven't, or if you haven't read it recently, you might want to pick it up again.
You know, I'm glad you said that. We're 37 episodes in, and I don't think anybody suggested that. We talk about getting
That's
things done.
Trying to be original.
Like, that might be, or maybe there's just one they read more recently that hit home. We mentioned getting things done, another time management strategy on just about every show. And that's I feel like the bottom up. But then the next book I would suggest people read right after that is always Seven Habits, because that's top down. It's really looking at that, your life from the 50,000 foot view and planning those things. The story you mentioned before about planning your big things, those hard things first, really reminds me of the first habit of highly effective people, which is first things first. So getting those big rocks in the jar before you put the pebbles in, and then before you pour the water in, which is an analogy in the book. So I'm glad you said that. I don't think it's overused. I think some people think maybe it's I actually emailed a reader and a listener that was asking for book advice, and I said that. He's like, oh, really? You know, my dad gave that to me, and it just seemed a little old. I didn't want to do it. I'm like, well, you know, when you're ready to really plan your life out a little bit more intentionally, it's a great book. You know, it's 30 some years old, but it still really hits home today. So thank you for sharing that. What about any tool or resource you might recommend to our listeners?
Well, anything you can use to keep track of your time would be a good tool. You can use just a basic spreadsheet or even writing down how you're spending your time in a notebook. But if you are the kind of person who prefers fancier stuff, there's lots of time tracking apps out there. So just do a quick search or ask friends for one that is useful for them. Like, there's so many out there that it really is just about trying it and seeing what you get out of it. And then you can figure out if you need more bells and whistles.
Yeah, if you're into spreadsheets, I've actually already got the link there, so you don't have to send it to me, Laura. You've got a spreadsheet on how you can manage the 168 hours of your week. So it's nice, it's clear, you don't have to remake the wheel if you don't want to. Is there any other app, because you said there are so many of them out there, is there any specific app that you've tried that you've enjoyed the user interface before? Or just,
I'm not an app person, but I've heard a number of people that Toggle, I'm not even sure how you say
yeah.
it. Yeah. GGL is great because the basic version is free. It's very intuitive, and people have found the data easy to use. So again, you could start with that one. And then once you've kept track of your time for a week, you can see what sort of other bells and whistles you might need and start exploring time tracking apps looking for those particular features.
All right. Well, thank you so much. And what about your frog? So we got this idea from Brian Tracy. He talks about eating your frog. So he aligns very well with you doing your most important task in the morning. And if your job is to eat a frog, well, it's probably should do that in the morning, because then everything else you do the rest of the day doesn't seem that bad. So you doing a heavy edit on your article, everything else, well, that's not so bad after doing that.
Yes, that's the thing. I do find it difficult sometimes to do edits, and it requires quite a bit of concentration. But I think there's also something to be said for not having many frogs in one's life. So that the work you're doing is really stuff that you want to be doing. And it may be difficult, but it doesn't quite feel like eating a frog. I guess that's how I would put it.
Yeah.
And so I'm really trying over time to follow that sense of, is this work that I'm enjoying doing, or is this work I'm not enjoying doing? And granted, there may be many frogs. Mini frogs is an M-I-N-I frogs within a bigger project that you absolutely adore. In which case, yes, tackle those first. I certainly found that analyzing the time logs that people sent me for this past book project required a bit of tedium. But that said, it was part of a larger project that I was really enjoying. So, you know, sometimes the frogs are there, but if you can make them slightly smaller frogs, that's awesome.
Ah, good advice. I don't think we've heard that before. We've got to clarify frogs sometimes for people, because frogs can be misconstrued as something bad. On episode, I believe it was 28 with Sam Carpenter, he thought a frog was a bad thing. He's like, well, I've got this lawsuit going on. I'm like, oh, no. Hey, frogs are good things, too. They're just a lot of work. They're just more difficult to do. So we don't have to get in there. We'll have to maybe explain that.
Well, this is also when people are trying to establish a morning routine, often they are starting by doing stuff they don't want to do. And the honest truth is, you're not going to keep getting up out of bed early for something you don't want to do. I mean, humans just don't do well with suffering long term. You need to come up with some sort of ritual that you actually enjoy. Otherwise, it really isn't going to stick.
Yeah, we can go off there. We're all about rituals. I know you're doing Habit Week on your blog. Yeah, so rewards are important as if you're going to do something not fun, and try to break down those big frogs and try to, what was the last thing you said? Get those frogs out of your life if you have too many ugly ones. That sounds great. Laura, this has been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed getting to talk to you, diving deep into your knowledge on time management, especially with highly successful people out there. Please feel free to give our listeners any parting piece of guidance we'd like to share with them. But also, more importantly, share where they can find you online and thank you, or maybe see more of your material.
I'd love to have your listeners come visit me at my website, which is lauravanderkam.com. I blog a couple times a week there and try to have a good conversation going on both personal and professional issues. So I'd love to hear their input.
Yeah, it looks like you have great conversations. All your articles have 20, 30, 40 comments on them. So you've got a lively community there. So thank you so much for joining us, Laura, and we'll get to see you next time.
Thank you so much for having me.
All of us have limited time. Figuring out who you are and what you want to do with that is just the starting point. Our goal on the Productivity Show is to help you find more focus and clarity on these two questions every single week. This is so you can start doing the right things, the things that align with your strengths, and bring the most passion, happiness, and meaning to your life. It's one thing to get more done, it's another to get more of the right things done. And knowledge alone is not enough. It's knowledge with action that's going to make the difference. We're here to guide you down that path, but you are the real teacher, the master, the leader, the guru in your own life. Asian Efficiency and the Productivity Show will show you some of the small hinges that open the big doors, but it's your job to walk through. And I hope you do. There's a whole world out there. Leaving an iTunes review will help other people like you do the same. Simply search for the show in iTunes and click Write a Review. Andrew wrote a 5-star review on April 25th saying, "We've all read and listened to a lot of how-to productivity books and podcasts. Zach takes it to another level by not only having interesting real-life guests, but also by asking them great questions to find their secrets to productivity success. Episodes don't go on forever, and I always learn something." 2 thumbs up. So thank you so much for that review, Andrew. And I just want to leave with all of the things that you could possibly ever do to be productive, which is plan, do, review, organize, prioritize, eliminate the unimportant, delegate and automate what you can, focus on your most important task, take care of yourself, find momentum, move towards your ideal, achieve anything but not everything, enjoy this life, do more, and be better. We want to start hearing more from listeners like you. You can now leave a personal voice message and we will answer it on the podcast. Just go to asianefficiency.com/speakpipe. Thanks, and I'll talk to you on the next episode.